Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our hosts will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to The Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our hosts will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Republic Forces Radio Network. I'm Jerry, and we're here with you this week discussing Episode 4 of Season 5, The Soft War. And I don't think it's a commercial or anything, you know, like consumer side-by-side comparisons of, like, leading brands of toilet tissue. But, no, we're back at Onderon for the third episode of this arc. I am joined by the same gentleman who's been with me the last couple weeks to continue to discuss the rebellion, the insurgency, the terrorist acts, what have you. But let's go ahead and let those folks introduce themselves. We have Nathan P. Butler.
Hey, guys. Nathan here. I'm pretty sure I actually fought my own soft war at one point. I used to own a Nerf bow and arrow.
Very good. And we have Barrett.
Hey, everybody. It's Barrett, Master Collect Them All from the Forums, your Swan Holocron Enhancer. And I'm not touching the soft war title. I'm not touching it.
Oh, come on. We're two for two on jokes here. You got to make some silly reference. Come on.
No. Jonathan?
Jonathan.
Okay, I've been trying to come up with a good one here. This episode was more fun than one of those foam pits.
I'm going to give you like a, you know, the judge is going to roll that one like a 3.5.
It's
on the spot, right? I know.
Well, no, it's anything that comes to mind is completely inappropriate.
All right, well, I'll give you points for discretion then.
All right.
All right, well, guys, great to be back with you this week. We are past the halfway point. Let's go down the line again and tell us what you thought about this week's episode.
Well, you know, I actually thought this was a pretty good one. It felt, I think one of our voicemailers mentioned the fact that the episode seemed like it was longer. It felt to me almost like this was a really, really fast episode. Like it just kind of hit the beats that it needed to hit, and that was it. It wasn't a bad episode. In fact, it was a pretty good episode, but it did feel like it just kind of blew by on us this time around.
You know, Nathan, I'm going to have to agree with you on that. I thought it was a pretty fast episode. You know, I don't know if it was because I kept expecting something to happen. You know, and a lot of things did happen. We saw that they are leading themselves now. You know, they were kind of doing that last episode, but they really are leading themselves now. And so it kind of shows growth in that. I kind of thought someone was going to bite the laser bullet this time, but nothing happened like that. But all in all, an enjoyable episode. We're going to get into some of the nuances and what actually was accomplished in this episode, but I enjoyed it.
I'm going to have to echo what you both have said. It was a really strong episode and it flowed really well. It kept up a very steady pace. Now, after I watched it the first time, I actually went back and, since I have all the episodes on my DVR, I watched the three of this arc so far in succession. And I have to say it blends really, really well. I can kind of see how this would just be, I would like to watch this kind of like in a theatrical setting where, you know, all the credits and fortune cookies are removed and it's just this nice flowing thing because it just is really, really strong this season. Really strong.
I absolutely hated this episode. Okay, I'm just kidding. It's just, you know, it just seems weird for all four of us to like start off out of the gate in the same side here. But no, you know, this arc has been very consistent so far and it's been very enjoyable. I like where it's going. I like to see just the what amount of growth we've seen in these rebels in such a short amount of time. And I don't know if we really have an idea of how much time is transpiring here. I don't know if this has been days, weeks, months, or what have you. Nathan, if you got any insight on that, let us know. But it's fun to see it week in, week out, and just see, you know, we're getting compelled to these characters and we're starting to really get on their side and now things are breaking wide open here with the previous king being such a big part of it, and can't wait to see where it goes. But I will say this, it started off just a little bit on the wrong foot, and not in a horrible way, but I just was a little taken back by the fact that the episode sort of starts as if nothing in the last episode mattered. Did you guys feel that way?
I didn't really pick up on that. It ended the last episode is the big reveal that wasn't really a reveal. Maybe I was looking too much into it. There seemed to be some ongoing tension between Saw and Steela, and I really liked how this episode started sort of right into the rush, right into, you know, it was kind of at a lull the end of last episode, but this episode just hit right with the action. And I liked it. I thought it started out strong and it grabbed me right away.
You know, I noticed that the tension between Lux and Saw has kept going, which kind of surprised me because they've accomplished so much in such a short or long period of time. Like you said, Jerry, we don't know how long this has been going on, but we know that they have been accomplishing their goals. You know, we've seen them blow up that battery, that droid battery. And I can understand where you're coming from, Jerry, because the whole purpose of last episode was to blow up this recharging station so all the droids would deactivate. And then they could presumably just knock them over like the Gungans did in episode one and win the battle. But not when you have reinforcements of more droids. They just drop off more droids. You know, we don't really know how many starships are in the planet, you know, that are just holding droids, but they have enough reinforcements where they dropped a big droid tank there. What is that, an AATT that they dropped off? And correct me if I'm wrong, but we haven't seen a Clone Wars AATT, have we? This is the first time this has been introduced.
Talking about the MTT that has the droids, like, on the racks in it?
Correct, MTT, not AATT. MTT.
The toy we just got, basically, yeah.
That they're going to repurpose and probably repaint to be a Clone Wars, I'm sure.
Not at $230 at Toys R Us, they're not.
Although, I will tell you, I watched this and my son Jonah pointed out, he goes, hey, we've never seen super battle droids in one of these before. And I have to admit, I don't think we had.
Oh, coming out of the MTT.
Yeah.
Good point. I'm not sure if I've seen that either. We usually think of it just being regular battle droids that like all fold up and compress and, you know, can kind of fit in your pocket like a Swiss Army knife.
You know, they also had the element of, I guess, kind of I'm going to go back and answer the whole thing about the does it pick up as if nothing ever mattered. But from the standpoint of that particular battle sequence, I mean, we're actually seeing them do the smart thing, which is, gee, the MTT is getting ready to unload battle droids. Now they're still folded up. Maybe we should just shoot the crap out of them while they're still on the racks and not able to fight back. It seems like that would be an obvious tactic, and yet it doesn't seem like something we see very much, if at all, elsewhere. But I'm not sure we could say that the last episode didn't matter. I have no idea how much time has passed at this point. I was going to do some hyperspace calculations for you, but yeah, not so much. We know that Kalani is now there. We know it's been long enough that the terrorist attacks have apparently continued based on what we saw in the opening newsreel here. And I think it flows fairly well in terms of the buildup of the rebellion, because you have, you know, your big attack that supposedly is supposed to show people that they really can win. You know, you had a handful of people out there. Yeah, 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 yeah. You know, those identical people that we saw in the crowds where every woman looks the same and every man looks the same, just with different color hair, because there's the same character models everywhere, especially in the crowd scenes. Those people apparently were excited a little bit early on with last episode. Now you have essentially another attack on Kalani's forces, but it's a declaration of intentions. Now, they've won enough battles that Steela needs to now make that proclamation. Now, please stand with us. This is our intention. Do not worry. Do not fear. She kind of takes that next step. The only thing that I felt was kind of dropped from the last episode, or felt weird from the last episode, but maybe it's consistent character-wise, is that, yeah, we still have a little bit of the tension with the whole Lux and Saw thing, not very much with the Saw and Steela stuff. Although, you know, he does appear to act rather rashly here. But I found that all of a sudden we have some tension between Lux and Steela. You know, the don't look at me like that. You almost expect him to say, you know, it makes me uncomfortable. They handled it better here than it did in Attack of the Clones. But I'm not sure if that is a character inconsistency, that all of a sudden there's tension when she was all over him kind of before, or if this is a matter of now that she's in a position of leadership, she doesn't have time for those sorts of things. She must remain focus. So there's a little bit of a hiccup between the two, but not much. I think I'm with Jonathan that these could probably flow pretty well if you watch these all back to back.
Well, and I don't disagree with that, but the origin of my thought there was is that I actually imagine in my head, what would this episode be like if I picked it up right after the first one when they just entered the city? And it wouldn't have been a half bad little connection between them, because and I think, Baron, you're the one who kind of picked up on this most, is that, yeah, they shut down this power generator. The droids aren't going to be able to recharge. Of course, they're going to send reinforcements. I mean, Dooku said as much at the end of the last episode, but it's like, we just start right back off on the streets, being patrolled by battle droids. People are going about their business, acting like the droids are normal, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. And the rebels are back to hiding in between buildings on top of rooftops. And it almost could have been their first attack. And hey, I'm Steela, please join us. In a lot of ways, except for the, we're going to elect Steela our leader, and oh, I've got to talk to him, he's my brother. Anything else could have went from episode one to episode three. That said, I enjoyed everything we got. I'm not saying it was crap, get rid of it, but it was just kind of weird. That's like, wow, we're kind of at the same place we were at the beginning of the second episode.
So what you're saying, Jerry, is that last week's episode was kind of like the episode one of the Clone Wars season so far, where it kind of worked, but you really didn't need it. You brought up something that was very funny, that you called them rebels. And Nathan, you called them terrorists. And I got an interesting email from Alan, who's on the forums, and he says, listen, you guys are missing out. He's like, they're guerrillas. Their last name's Guerrera. And I was like, oh, okay. I'm not sure if I like guerrilla forces better, but for some reason that sits a lot better with me, that they're guerrilla forces. And they've done a lot of guerrera warfare. When I was looking at them as terrorists last episode and looking at them as rebels, trying to, you know, I was having a hard time looking at them as rebels, but I can picture them as guerrillas for some reason. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Well, wasn't that the point that I made either last episode or the episode before about how it looks like they're making a play on the name Che Guevara with this? And he was a guerrilla leader at the time in, was it Argentina? And I remember thinking that that was kind of an interesting way to play it, if that was what they were intending here, because it's sort of one of those, it's easy to base them on, say, the American Revolution. You do that, you automatically paint them in a heroic light to American audiences, because that's what we're familiar with. You put it in a terrorist light, and we make that comparison, say, to modern events, we automatically have sort of a negative view of them because of what we've gone through in the last decade, decade and a half. You give them Guevara, and it's something that Americans aren't quite as familiar with as part of the audience, and there are so many different takes on that person within history, positive and negative, depending on which, you know, part of the spectrum you fall on, that it sort of allows them to be almost like they were intending a more nebulous approach, which I guess sparks the kind of discussions we've had the last couple of weeks.
They call that out this episode. They talk about the fact, you know, your terrorists, no, we're rebels, and they make the distinction that they're rebels because they're being occupied, that they didn't ask for the separatists to come there. It was kind of forced on them. And so they're freedom fighters, guerrillas, whatever you want to call it. They're trying to regain their own sovereignty.
But it kind of begs the question of whether that's even the case, because the way that they're laying this out on the StarWars.com stuff, the little episode bits where they kind of link over to the little character profiles, they don't give us much, but they give us bits and pieces. And the way it's making it sound on there is that King Dendup was in power, and as he says in this episode, when it came time to choose between Republic and Separatist, he chose neutrality and not to go with either one. This, according to StarWars.com, made him appear decisive or indecisive, so it wound up with essentially a bunch of intrigue in the background that winds up with Rash coming up and sort of deposing him from the throne using his political maneuvering, getting himself into power, and then, of course, he brings in the Separatists. But it seems as though there is at least some support with him behind the idea of bringing in Separatists, of aligning themselves with one side or the other, because otherwise why would indecision have been a tool to use to bring Dendup down, which makes it sound as though maybe at least some of the people of Onderon wanted the Separatists to be there, or at least wanted one side or the other to be there. It makes me wonder if these rebels really are expressing the majority opinion of Onderon. You know, it's like the old thing I mentioned last time about the thirds. You know, you could say that there's in the American Revolution, a third for Britain, a third for independence, and then kind of a third in the middle who are just kind of caught in the middle of this thing. Makes me wonder if maybe the balance is even more skewed than that, and essentially these rebels are a minority trying to foist their idea of independence on the majority. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out if they finally give us more details next episode, because right now we're only getting little sprinkles on StarWars.com.
And, you know, I didn't have a chance to look at StarWars.com, but just from watching the episodes and especially watching all three together all at once, I got the impression that the new king, basically, because Ramses was indecisive, that he actually brought the separatists in who then kept, you know, basically put him in power. Because the other thing that we saw this week that we haven't seen any other week is now we're seeing, you know, human militia, whereas previously we only saw droids. We saw none of Onderon's, you know, sort of native defense force or military.
It's because they walk around carrying sticks.
I will say, and this is kind of the continuity element here, kind of opening up, we've got the new separatist commander here, the new super tactical droid, a supery dupery tactical droid, Kalani, and we've got Tandon, who is the leader of the Royal Guard, the guy that winds up eventually turning on Rash there at the end. And I gotta say, it's cool to see who's playing these guys, because one of the things that was noticed about this arc early on was that they're bringing in new voice actors to the Clone Wars who haven't played anything in the series, even bit parts before. And here you've got a couple guys who are new to this series, but they're huge in terms of voice acting in cartoons. Kalani is played by Greg Berger, who played Spirit on G.I. Joe, Grimlock on the original Transformers, Cornfed on Duckman, and Odie on Garfield, which I'm sure is the most taxing of the roles. Tandon is played by David Kaye, who is also from Transformers. He did Megatron on Beast Wars. He did Optimus Prime on Transformers Animated. He also plays Clank in the Ratchet and Clank video game. So we got some serious vocal talent being brought in here. I can't wait to see if they really get a chance to stretch that talent next episode, or it'll be sort of like a minor blip appearance like what we had with Dengar last season.
So Tandon was, his voice was done by a voice actor who had done some 80s cartoons that we're familiar with. And what I just could not get over, I don't know if anybody else caught this or thought about this, but Tandon looked like Miles Mayhem from the Mask animated series in the 80s.
Didn't he, though?
And in fact, the King, right after Tandon and Kalani start kind of bickering back and forth, as they're bickering, Rosh says, well, we've got to put a stop to this mayhem. Like, oh my God, that had to be intentional. That had to be intentional. He looks just like Miles Mayhem. I was expecting him to get into a little jet, turn into a helicopter, and get out of there.
So I don't know what's worse, that I know who Miles Mayhem is at 36 years old, or the fact that you brought him up and referenced him in a Clone Wars cartoon very effortlessly.
Well, you know, I think the show did it for me, though. This, I don't think this goes on my bingo card. I think the show did this intentionally, but I guess perhaps we'll never know. What do you guys think about the interactions between Kalani, Rosh, you know, them in that? I mean, did you get the feeling that Miles Mayhem was going to turn out to be okay?
Not entirely sure that I kind of got that feeling initially. I was surprised when he actually turned. I figured if he would, it wouldn't be in this episode. I figured they were setting it up for the next one. But it was cool to see it. And it seems more and more as though, you know, Rash is kind of going to be the fall guy here. If this doesn't work, it's on his head. You know, it's almost like Dooku is already sort of separating himself by putting Kalani in there in between. So Kalani could say, look, I gave you all these resources and you still screwed it up. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in the end next time. Is it going to be a pat ending where he gets killed, or he just gets taken into custody, Rash, that is? Or is it going to be something where it's almost like what happened with Ventress, where it's up, it's time to cut the cord, and now you're on your own?
I was not surprised at all, because he kept giving the King some lip, you know, and disagreeing with him and getting away with it. And so that told me right there that he has some brass and he knows what the right thing to do is. And all it was going to take was a lot of someone that he respected, whether it be the community at large or the King, to be in danger and him snap right out of it, you know, and say, you know, these are my people. I'm supposed to be protecting them, not executing them, you know, not executing my honorable King. So I saw that coming. But, you know, I'm very surprised at the way that Rash has been portrayed. He's not very powerful or wise or particularly too smart. You know, he just seems to be, like you said, Nathan, someone they're kind of putting in there to be the fall guy once it falls over, because he's not making really any decisions. He's letting people talk, you know, back to him who's supposed to be following him, and he's failing. So I just thought it was a surprise that this guy is not really evil. He's just kind of a yes man.
He's a puppet. That's all he is. And that's why he's in power. And that's why he is backed by the separatists, because he can be Dooku's puppet, because he doesn't really have any ambition or control. He's just happy being the king, and he's somebody that can be easily manipulated. And I still think that Dooku's overall plan was to bring Kalani in there and kind of take over Onderon for himself.
Dooku has a lot of puppets. You know, you could say that Grievous is his puppet, but Grievous is evil. I just don't get the evil from him. It's almost like he's being forced to do this, you know, and it's like a little kid with power. I just thought it would be more interesting. There's no character development. Where is the character arc for the king who's in power? And that's kind of missing in this episode, I think.
Well, at the same time, I think it's kind of irrelevant, too, because, I mean, we know how this is going to play out. He's the king who's kind of the figurehead that Dooku's using, because it's not like Dooku can just waltz in there and take over the throne himself. He needs someone who's just going to be, yeah, hey, I'll do whatever you want. If you make me rich and put me in charge and everything, I'll run your show your way. And then, but he's just stupid enough to think that he's really in power and that he's got some leverage on Dooku, when nothing could be further from the truth. So, you know, his character arc is going to be simply that, hey, I'm going to think I'm a little bit more than what I am, and then I'm probably going to bite it at the end of Dooku's lightsaber when I mess up.
Yeah, he's very much sort of the stereotypical, and stereotypical because it's based on actual history to some degree, the stereotypical puppet leader, or ineffective leader, who once he's in power, like his time is spent trying to figure out, how do I get the power? Once he's in, he doesn't get people fawning over him immediately, and he starts trying to take desperate and more disconnected from reality type of measures to try to keep that authority. Like, we saw that in the previous episode. He's blaming Dendup as if somehow, from being locked up, Dendup is the one behind this rebellion. And here he still doesn't seem to grasp that fact or grasp the reality of it. So, you know, what do you do? Okay, you're a pretender to the throne in a sense. You've just taken over. You want to make sure that the previous regime cannot come back into power, because A, if the people side with them, that would delegitimize your new government that you've set up. And of course, there's always the thought of literally they could be a part of an uprising against you here. So what do you do? Well, you got to execute him. In this case, he takes sort of that same, oh, you're speaking out against me, you must be destroyed type of thought process that we get with, say, the French Revolution, which is a perfect comparison here, because we have essentially a laser guillotine here. Apparently there was a Dr. Guillotin somewhere on Onderon at some point, and, you know, we've got, you know, they called it the National Razor back in the French Revolution. Now we have the National Laser. You know, we're going to solve our problems by sticking the guy's head in it and slicing it off. And somehow, by killing him, oh, we solve all the problems. We have no rebellion. They've got their symbolic defeat. There's nobody for them to put in power in place of me. Problem solved. He misses that same thing that most of the stereotypical figures in this position do, which is, oh, yeah, this is going to make things worse. He follows the familiar pattern, unfortunately, because he could probably be more interesting if he didn't.
Okay, but that's kind of the interesting thing. You know, King Dendup is sort of the central part of this whole episode, which kind of surprised me a little bit. I didn't think that he'd be... I didn't think he'd survive the whole episode. It's obvious now that, you know, we see that he's freed, and now he can actually reestablish his legitimate government. But yeah, what I thought was kind of interesting is that they make it known, they announce it, that hey, we're going to execute Dendup because of his crimes. And, you know, King Rosh kind of makes it look good in front of the people that, yep, hey, he's behind all this and all this chaos and the Miles mayhem that's going on. We need to execute him. What happens, though, is that Saw says, well, shoot, we gotta go rescue him. Let's do it. And it's Steela who says, no, Saw, don't go. You're not gonna go. That's not our plan. But then he goes anyway. What do you guys think about that? I think this is a very interesting moment for Saw, given, and really Steela too, given how last week's episode ended. She's the leader, and he's like, hey, don't worry, sis. I got to do this on my own anyway. It's cool. I got this.
The thing with Saw is he is very much, as I've said before, the alpha male. He resented Steela being elected the leader last episode. He's always felt he knows what to do, and he is very much feels that he needs to be a man of action, so to speak. So when he basically disregarded her wishes, basically almost undermined her by just going off and doing what he wanted, I almost see that as very much part of the character that's already been established, and maybe a little bit in talking to Dendup and Miles Mayhem later, we start to see a character arc where he needs to understand that he is part of a greater picture. I mean, he's even a little condescending to Steela when they attempt the rescue, and he's like, well, nice try, sis.
I was almost thinking that the king, or the rightful king, if you want to call him that, Dendup, was chastising him where there was going to be some kind of twist to Dendup, because even Dendup seems like he is taking a negative view. I mean, when Saw comes in there kind of playing his Hunchback of Onderon kind of thing, whatever that was, where somehow he's ducking and weird looking inside his cloak, Dendup is like, oh, so you're one of the troublemakers who this, and this. And it's like, okay, yeah, I understand that this is putting your life in danger because Rash thinks that you are somehow behind this king, but hello, someone coming to rescue you, someone who's doing things supposedly for the good of your planet. And it's not that, you know, initially I thought, well, maybe this is all just because he doesn't want the Republic or the Separatists involved, and he's just afraid that if the Rebels win, they'll go to the Republic side. Well, no, because as soon as he finds out that the Jedi are involved, he's heartened later in the episode. So I did not get Dendup's attack, if you want to put it that way, on Saw. But it seems like everybody's dumping on Saw in this episode, and Lux, for that matter.
Well, and I thought it was a cool moment when Saw gets in there so effortlessly, and I thought the one-way shield thing was kind of cool. It's like, oh, gee, Saw, I bet you didn't think about that, did you? Because obviously, I mean, if it was that wide open, Dendup still has to be contained a little bit. But yeah, I'm like you, Nathan. You know, it's like, it was kind of like that scene with Princess Leia on the Death Star. It's like, I'm Luke Skywalker, I'm here with Ben Kenobi. And then Leia's like, oh, Ben Kenobi. So it's like the moment he mentions Jedi, Dendup's like, awesome, we got the Jedi on our side, let's go. But again, like I said, the hits that one-way shield, they can't get out. Saw's taken captive. It kind of like a... yeah, like one of you guys just said, that at some point Saw's going to realize that, hey, I go off half-cocked on my own, ripping heads off battle droids. You know, something can still kind of bad happen to me because there's some things that I'm not thinking about. So he's captured. And, you know, Nathan, you mentioned this earlier. I really thought the guillotine thing was really cool. But I was kind of surprised that it, I guess, took Magna Guards to operate the thing. I was surprised to see them. Are they just standard issue with all droid generals? I just thought that was kind of a General Grievous thing.
It was weird. It was almost like the beams that were there that look so deadly because, you know, they're red, are essentially, I guess, guiding beams or something. So you stick the head inside, but it takes a Magna Guard sending an electric current somehow through it that makes it solidified, or however you want to put it. It's a very odd way of doing it. Kind of cool to watch, but as soon as they start lowering his head into it, I'm freaking out thinking, oh crap, they're about to slice his head off, but instead his head goes right through it. That and the one-way shield were some interesting tech for this episode.
Well, but you know, you see that kind of with the fruit. Rash kind of demonstrates it for us. He puts that fruit, you know, kind of look like a pear or something in it, and it's just kind of floating there. And I thought, oh, wow, that's like slowly cutting that through. Then they activate it, then it cuts, and then you kind of get what's going on. Because, yeah, I kind of thought that too, because, you know, when Rash is talking to Dendup, he gets awfully close to it. And I'm like, well, geez, dude, watch out. But you're right, kind of feels like the moral equivalent of a lightsaber. But of course, that gives us that big dramatic moment where, quite frankly, I thought they may have waited a little too long, but it all worked out to where, you know, they are a split second before the guards are going to activate this thing and cut his head off. But then Steela comes in with the two perfect shots, which I didn't think hitting Magna Guards in the head and the face really mattered anyway, because we see Obi-Wan, you know, slice their heads off and they can still operate. But whatever, it works. And they get in there and they rescue the king. Kinda.
Kinda, yes. And again, with the fruit, with this guy and the fruit. If they ever make an action figure of this guy, they better give us the fruit, because he doesn't eat anything else. He's like me and Twizzlers. But yeah, with the two shots, she did wait a little long when she was like, not yet. I'm like, here's another whites of the eyes call, which is going to be a mistake. They kind of save him. But if it wasn't for, who are you going to give this to? You going to give this to Miles Mayhem, or are you going to give this to Ahsoka, the escape?
I think we need to give it to Miles Mayhem, because he was prepared to sacrifice himself. And he, you know, everybody else was free after the super battle droids came in and execute. I mean, just really, it was a violent death for one of the rebels there. She just turns around, just gets nailed. But I think he was ready to sacrifice himself to let Dendup and the other rebels go free.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm not sure if Tandem was concerned if he was going to make it out or not, because for a moment he kind of looked surprised that, oh no, they're all just going to come in at me. And Rash is like, well, when you let go of me, what I thought was going to happen is that Tandem was going to say something like, who says anything about letting go of you? And I thought the droids were just going to mow them both down. That's what I thought was going to happen. That would have been kind of cool. I didn't actually see Ahsoka get involved, because they made such a point throughout the episode of, I'm not going to get involved, I'm not going to get involved. And really, in a lot of ways, her involvement was kind of minimal. I mean, she makes this, pulls the lightsabers out, does this awesome move, does the force pushback, and then they just walk away. I'm like, crap, that's it. It'd been cooler if they mowed him down.
And she used the Force Unleashed move, because I don't think we've ever seen Ahsoka that stinking powerful.
But, you know, they kind of mentioned, I think it was in season 2, how powerful Ahsoka is getting. And I think, Nathan, you had brought that up. You're like, when is Ahsoka powerful all of a sudden? Now she's powerful? Well, we're kind of seeing her grow up, and, you know, that was an OG move that she did. And to your point, Jerry, for Ahsoka to jump in, you're right. She was taking more of a back, kind of a leading from behind, and Lux wasn't even involved. Lux was already gone. So if Lux was the one who has to sacrifice himself so everybody else could leave, I can understand a little bit more why she would actually jump in and help. But she doesn't know this guy. She doesn't know General Tandon. So why would she jump in and save him? So it was kind of off character for her. I didn't understand that myself.
It'd been better if she had jumped in after the rebels put their guns down. That was the most desperate moment. To your
right,
point.
Was she going to watch him get all mowed down?
She was going to come in there. She was preparing. And if the general hadn't come up with his troops, she would have gotten involved. But what I found interesting is, like, now they're suddenly realizing that there's a Jedi involvement, not after she helped last episode defeat all those droids. I think somebody, you know, sort of missed the memo.
Yeah, somebody missed the memo, because they're all dressing like Jedi now. It's not just one or two Jedi with hoods on. Now they're all dressing like they're from Coruscant.
Well, the droids that had all that intel, they got shut down in the last episode. So they had to kind of start from scratch on the data.
Now, what I gotta wonder is, and I guess this is sort of as we're thinking towards next week, you know, we end this with Ahsoka not sure if they're going to send other Jedi reinforcements. You know, that's up to the council and whatnot. It is going to escalate. They're all sure of that. She's revealed herself, and whether it was the night before or the episode before, or if it was this event, either way, they know she's there now. And it kind of makes me wonder, you know, if they do have to send reinforcements, given the fact that she was not supposed to be directly involved, they were supposed to be there essentially as a support role, nothing else. You know, if they have to send more Jedi, is this in effect a failure for Ahsoka? Or if they liberate the planet, even if she has failed in that aspect of the mission, is this still a success for her? It makes me wonder if there is a point at which there'll be some chastisement of Ahsoka next week, or if they'll just play it off as in, oh, well, you know, this is just kind of the normal way of doing business. No harm, no foul.
You know, one thing about that scene that I thought was pretty cool, and I think it shows the complete turn of the people, is that when the super battle droids started kind of marching towards them as the rebels were trying to leave, you see just normal crowds people pushing up against super battle droids, and the super battle droids act like they're not allowed to shoot.
Well, it's okay, because you can kill any of the crowds people that you want, because they're all clones.
I was thinking that super battle droids, we know how strong they are. Why couldn't they just move through it? They seem like maybe the stripped down models, because they couldn't get through this crowd. I mean, I didn't think they were that strong.
They're the paper mache models, so that Saw could rip their heads off.
I just took it as they weren't programmed to kill just the townsfolk.
It was like directive number 3 or something, or whatever, from RoboCop.
That's what I got. Not that they weren't strong, but that they weren't programmed to deal with that. They were sent there as reinforcements to fight the rebels, and that's their specific program. So these are kind of like different robots than were there before, who were there for crowd control, gate security, stuff
so
like that.
They're not the urban pacification models.
Right. Those guys are shut down. These guys are fighting. And when you have a bunch of unarmed people who are just yelling at you, maybe that does not compute.
Barron, you make them sound like they're the concert security models.
The rent-a-cops. Yeah. No, it makes me wonder, though, also, if this is a subtle chance for us to see a little bit more of the human side of the Separatists and such. We're used to thinking of them as killers. In this case, when given the opportunity to fire into a crowd of civilians to get what they want, they don't do it. You know, there's that human face that we've been seeing every so often with the separatists, whether it was intended this time or just a plot flub. It seems as though in this case, for whatever reason, they did not want regular citizens harmed. And that's a plus on the separatist side.
Did you just say that there's a human side to robots?
You know what I mean? A human side to the motivations and the orders being given by the separatists, because usually we don't get a chance to really see that for the most part. I mean, we see them as evil, and we associate the evil with characters like, you know, Maul and Savage out there, you know, killing innocents and whatnot. And yet in this case, given the chance to actually do that, they refrain. I was subtly impressed by that, and I kind of looked over at my fiance with a, did they just stop kind of look, and we just kind of chalked it up to a hopefully a purposeful plot point.
All right, well, before we jump into our voicemails this week, I did want to cover kind of one last topic that, you know, kind of happened about the middle of the show, but we see the Steela and Lux kind of one-on-one interaction with kind of the episode 2 line of, hey, don't look at me like that. And Steela's, which I'm not exactly sure, maybe just some of the limitations of the animation versus real actors, although the actor, I guess, that we had in episode 2 was Hayden Christensen, but maybe that's not a good good comparison to draw there. But I guess I didn't really get how she could really have sensed or picked up on a quote-unquote look. But kind of an interesting exchange, because I was kind of thinking Steela would have been a little bit more into it than that, unless she's just like, I think, Jonathan, you're the one who mentioned this earlier, that she's just like, nope, I'm a leader now, and I got to put everything on hold.
It's nice to know that he actually finally woke up. I didn't really have a problem with that. I mean, it was obvious direct callback with that line, which for me was kind of a groaner, but it's, you know, maybe he is finally coming around, and maybe actually what I think is now that Steela is in more of that leadership role, she's making these tough decisions that Lux may be seeing some of his mother in her, and he's finding that appealing. Oh, come on. Let's not go there.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Psychologist.
He's been kind of oblivious up till this point, right? You know, he doesn't really get that these two women are interested in him. But now Steela is, you know, she's standing up and she's making speeches and she's, you know, making these tough decisions and really kind of just really embracing this whole leadership. And suddenly he's interested.
He's waiting for that moment where the strong Star Wars female character is undermined by stripping her down to very little clothing or strategically torn clothing. He's just kind of keeping an eye out.
Well, yeah, it's kind of interesting, Jonathan, you kind of draw that comparison, because even, you know, King Dendip draws the comparison and says, your mother would be very proud of you type thing. So we are kind of seeing that come together of, I guess, of how maybe he's going to be fulfilling his mother's place with this reestablished government, perhaps. So kind of interesting. But I think the one thing that's interesting about Lux is that it seems like near the end of the episode, where they're all partying and kind of like celebrating the fact that Miles Mayhem and the old king is together with them, it kind of seems like Lux is like, all right, well, I'll go flirt with Ahsoka a little bit. Did you guys pick up on that, or was I dreaming?
No, there was maybe some flirtation there, but he was making goo-goo eyes at Steela this episode. There's really no denying that. And I think, as it's been said before, I think he knows that Ahsoka is somewhat off limits.
I don't think he likes Ahsoka. If you look at the history between how he treats Ahsoka, he left Ahsoka in space last time after she rescued him from the Mandalorians, from Death Watch. I don't think he likes Ahsoka.
You know, I don't think that is, you know, anything you can kind of bring into the discussion. I think that was more of a, hey, I don't know what I've got myself into. I might be in a lot of trouble. I don't really have allies right now. I can't bring Ahsoka into this. I'm probably more of a danger to her than if she tries to stay with me. So I think he was trying to do a good thing there, not just like, you know, dear God, woman, leave me alone type thing. So I don't know. It's kind of interesting to see where that will play out. I hope it doesn't get, and I don't think it did in this episode, I hope it doesn't go back to sort of the tween romance we saw in the first episode, but we'll see.
Maybe they're trying to make a political statement with the episode about the whole marriage equality debate kind of stuff here. Interracial is fine, interspecies, not so much.
They could throw us all for a loop, and Steela and Ahsoka could hook up.
And Saw would still make goo-goo eyes at his sister.
All right. Well, let's take some time here and get to a couple of our voicemails. And our first voicemail is from Mitchell.
Hi, guys. Mitchell here. I'm calling to share my thoughts with the Clone Wars. episode 3 of the Onderon trilogy, The Soft War. And this was a pretty good episode. It had a lot of up and downs. It seemed quite long, actually. Lots of story points in here. There was, like you guys talked in last week's episode, about the whole issue of terrorism. And I think it certainly depends, like, the king and Kalani definitely think these people are terrorists without a doubt. And I think the people really realize at the end of this episode that they weren't, with Steela and the whole, I guess you'd call it, propaganda, her speech that she gave. I thought it was very interesting. And we got back to the Ahsoka, Lux, Steela, love triangle thing that Nathan was talking about. And Lux was getting just beaten up in this episode. At one point, after Saw is captured, Steela says, "I just don't look at me like that." That was a line straight out of Attack of the Clones when Padme and Anakin, "Don't look at me like that. Why not? It makes me uncomfortable." I was actually kind of surprised she didn't say that. But that was interesting. And when Lux left the room, it almost looked as if he was shedding a tear. That was, and then Ahsoka later in the episode comes out and says, purpose over feelings or something along those lines. And his face just goes like blank. And I'm like, wow, they're really beating up on him. And then they had their good friendship talk at the end. I didn't really see the point in that. That was kind of dumb, but it was really interesting to see the general that we were introduced. I think this is the first time we saw him in this episode. Betrayed the king. That whole standoff at the end went so many different ways. They had the king, they didn't, then they did. Then the general and the king are still there. Ahsoka rescues him. And then the king definitely finds out that the Jedi are backing the rebels. And that, I think next week's episode and the forthcoming episodes of this arc are going to be way more action-packed, with Obi-Wan saying, you know, the real fight is about to begin. And the question remains if the Jedi Council are going to discuss whether to send reinforcements. I think it would be very interesting if they sent another Padawan, like maybe Barriss, just shake it up a little bit, or send back Rex. I think that would be... But they're going to discuss where to send reinforcements. And in the trailer, we actually saw Hondo with Lux and Ahsoka with, I guess, it has to be on their own trilogy, so I guess we're going to see Hondo coming up. That was in the trailer for Season 5, so... And it's in the trailer, it shows them battling outside the city, so maybe they're going to get driven out, maybe they're going to leave. I still think that little house they go back to every once in a while to discuss, I still think they're going to get ambushed there. And we did get to see some rebels die. That one girl that kind of floated in and out, was she got shot by a super battle droid, and I like to see that, because not that I like watching people die, but it is important to see some rebels die. And I actually thought Saw was going to get it, like, or one of those guys wasn't going to make it out of there, but it just turned out to be the girl. So look forward to seeing you guys' discussion about this. Very interesting episode. See you next week. Bye.
Well, I guess I'm going to have to disagree with you that I like some of my compatriots here, felt that this episode moved pretty quick. It didn't feel long. I'm curious to see is why you felt it was dragging, because I thought it moved really quick. And when it was over, I couldn't believe that the time had already gone by.
I didn't take it that he felt the show was dragging in so much as that it just felt like a lot happened and that it was a longer episode. I kind of got that feeling. At some point when I ended, I was like, man, how long has this been going on? I was trying to like count where the commercial breaks would have been, because I watched this on iTunes. I mean, since they changed times, I have not yet once watched this on Saturday morning. I was even home Saturday morning. This is the first time I was actually home at 9:30. My daughter's soccer game wasn't until 11, so I actually was home for it. I just totally forgot. I've gotten myself into the iTunes habit. So I don't see the commercials or really understand. I was trying to find them and count them. And I was like, man, how long has this episode been going on? Not because it felt long and dragging. Like, you know, it wasn't a come on, wrap it up already. It was just like a, wait a minute, was this one episode or two? Because so much happened.
It's almost like they had their beats that they had to meet for this episode. This must happen, this must happen, this must happen. And they just went straight through them. They didn't have a lot of flab this episode. So it had a lot of content, even if it was, you know, zipping by as it went.
It was a mostly action episode. It wasn't a lot of talking.
It's like the beginning or the end of any Star Wars movie, not the middle. It's not Dagobah.
All right, let's move on to our second voicemail from Zach.
Hello, Republic Forces Radio Network. It's Zach. And I'm here to talk about, I don't remember the name of the episode, let me check it, The Soft War. All in all, I thought this was a pretty good episode. I mean, this whole arc has been very, you know, it's been a good arc so far, and, you know, I'm looking forward to next week, but I have a feeling that what we're going to see is that this is probably going to be, you know, probably the weakest arc of the season, because we see from the trailers, I mean, we see so many great stuff coming from the trailer, you know, like the Republic Commando, you know, Death Watch and Maul are teaming up together, you know, the Falleen are coming in, and I just have a feeling that this is going to be the worst arc of this season, but I still like this episode, it was still pretty good. Alright, bye.
Well, I have to say, if this is the weakest arc that we get this season, then awesome. It's about time that we get a season that really amps things up beyond this point, because we've seen what they can do with the animation, we've seen what they can do with some of the storytelling. You know, now that they got longer arcs coming up, let's really rock this fifth season, which doesn't seem like apparently it's going to be their last season now based on some of the things Filoni has said, but, you know, we passed the 100 episode mark, or right around the 100 episode mark. Let's really get this thing going.
Yeah, I was kind of excited by this voicemail, because when he said that, I thought to myself, wow, you know, if this is the weakest arc of the season, then we're going to have a pretty phenomenal season, because I think this is good stuff. And it kind of leads into our third voicemail from Dale, where he kind of mentions about how it's pretty good early on. So Dale, let's hear what you've got.
Hey, Republic Forces Radio Network. This is Dale, Jedi Parker from the forums. Just got done watching this week's episode of The Clone Wars, and I am really enjoying this season so far. I have to say, one of the things that I've kind of noticed about this season, at least this arc, is that it seems very familiar. Like, a lot of things seem retread. It's taking a lot of what happened at the beginning of the previous season, with the Mon Cals and all of them, and it's sort of doing it better. Like, it just seems like, I don't know, they're doing something better with it this time around, and because of that, I am enjoying it much more, and I'm thinking that this is a much more satisfying arc. So anyhow, that's me. Hope you guys are doing well. Thanks so much.
You know, it is kind of an interesting thing, Dale, that you mentioned there. I didn't even think about, you know, how last season started off the exact same way. Kind of a, you know, occupying of a world, getting them to, on the surface, seem like they're supporting the Separatists, yet you have this insurgency that apparently was fine for the Jedi and the Republic to be involved in, by the way. But, yeah, it was actually kind of the same story.
I gotta wonder to what extent the idea of, in the Mon Calamari arc, we had the previous leader being assassinated, and there's a next one in line who's being denied the throne, plays into the parallels here, where in this case it's a deposed ruler without an immediate heir. Like, does the question of legal succession, or lack thereof, make a difference in whether the Jedi feel like this is a civil conflict that we can only advise in, we can't fight a war for you, or one they can dive in head first? Because the line seems to be very, very vague, because of the different situations we've seen throughout the seasons here. It's almost as though, you know, the one that's a civil conflict that we don't want to get involved in is just whichever one we don't feel like getting involved in at the moment. And the one that is the one we do feel like. There doesn't seem to be a specific moral boundary here.
Oh, I'm going to disagree with you there, Nathan, because I think there is a big distinction between what was happening on Calamari and what was happening in this episode. In the Mon Calamari arc, they were oppressing the natives. They were killing them. They were coming in and they were instigating a war. On Onderon, it's an occupation, but there's no fighting except this small group of rebels that is just kind of starting an uprising. But there was a full-on battle. There was a war going on between the Quarren and the Mon Cals, and they were each supported by one of the factions. I think when you kind of think about it, I think maybe the Mon Cal conflict would be more like a Vietnam, and this would be more like a Nicaragua.
So that makes this the soft war?
Dun-dun-dun.
Yeah, but you know what? You know, Dale, one thing I will have to disagree with you. The Mon Cal arc had, like, a super jacked-up killer shark man. And I don't see Rash, like, just nosediving through people, okay? And that's one thing that'd make this arc awesome.
Well, we haven't seen everything that the General Kalani can do yet.
That's true. I guess the arc is still young.
Form, feet, and legs!
Maybe that's where my mask reference comes in. He'll turn into a semi or something, and they can ride off on him.
I like the fact that they bring in Kalani, and he's, like, specially painted for Onderon, especially since we were supposed to get a specially painted astromech for them to be using in the throne room, but they wound up, for whatever reason, not using it. They just reused the one from R2 Come Home. But, you know, that's nice, you know. Dooku cares enough to send a personalized, super-duper-duper battle technical droid.
Well, I think I mentioned that our last discussion, that I noticed that General Kalani was painted in the Onderonian colors, and it kind of, again, leads me to believe that maybe he was setting up to take over a little bit more, have maybe a stronger presence there.
All right, guys. Well, good discussion here. Let's wrap up with some of our final thoughts and maybe what you're kind of expecting and hoping out of next week's show.
Well, I really have high hopes for next week's episode. This has been a pretty good arc so far. As much as this episode pushed the story along, it'll be interesting to see where next week goes. I mean, they've only got 20 some odd minutes to wrap up this entire story arc and give us some of the things that were hinted at in those little TV guide blurbs. You know, who is going to be the rightful leader? Who's going to wind up on the throne, et cetera, et cetera. What terrible price are they going to pay? So far, we haven't really seen a lot of that stuff play out. So hopefully that'll all come together in a nice explosive conclusion next week. Or maybe, goodness willing, force willing, maybe we'll see something that wraps it up to a degree and actually leaves some threads that are picked up in other episodes later this season rather than making it all neat and tidy. So, you know, here's hoping. Fingers crossed.
Well, I'm hoping for some tragedy, some fatalities. Historically, a revolution demands bloodshed. Blood and treasure has to be spent. And yes, we saw the death of a kind of, she was not an unnamed rebel. She had a name, but she wasn't someone who had a character arc that we really cared about. So I'm expecting in this next episode for someone to die. And I'm not sure if it's going to be the king, Saw, maybe Lux, you know, who knows, but somebody's going to have to buy the farm. Somebody's going to have to buy the Gundark. Okay. And I just don't know who it is. I made some predictions last show and it wasn't correct. So I'm just waiting for that. You know, if they are able to tell the story of how they either are victorious in their struggles or how Dooku comes down on them with the Iron Fist and their rebellion gets wiped out or something next to that, I think that this will top off this story arc quite nicely.
Well, I think in traditional Star Wars fashion, we're going to end with a large battle. And I don't know if it's been released outside this, but I know Jerry and I saw a fair amount of this upcoming battle at C6 during some of the panels. I think it's going to be amazing. But like Nathan, I hope that they don't tie it all up with a little bow because, you know, war is not like that. And I think that things have been a little too cut and dry previously, but everything else has been stepped up this season. I'll see if they do that too.
Yeah, and I think you guys' thoughts are right on. I really don't have much to add to that other than to say that I'm kind of keeping the count here for the season so far, and I think we are, you know, 4 for 4 for some really good episodes this season. Glad to see season 5 starting off so strong. It seems like we either get, you know, one or two episodes that starts off the season pretty strongly, and then we have a dip. And, you know, if assuming this arc ends the way that it's been progressing so far, we're going to have the first 5 episodes that are really getting us into the season very strongly and echoing back what Zach said. Hey, let's hope this is the weakest arc of the season and it just keeps getting better and better and better. Speaking of seasons, though, by the time this episode airs, the season 4 DVD and Blu-ray release will be out there. And as we're recording it, we're just a couple of days away from it. Who's among us here on the call? Who's getting this thing day one? Who's going to have a copy of this by next week to talk about?
Oh, I'll definitely have one. My boys and I are already set. We've kind of carved out a little time this weekend to maybe screen some of our favorite episodes from last season. I'm looking forward to it because I know there's a lot of cut scenes and missing footage, and I'm hoping that this is a really good release. I'm interested to see what they include.
Yeah, I've got my copy pre-ordered from Amazon, so hopefully it'll be here by the end of release week. I have said from the beginning, ever since they first started putting these out on Blu-ray with the film, that is the best way to watch these things. Even if you don't like seeing these on television, give it a try on Blu-ray. The picture's gorgeous, the sound is terrific, the aspect ratio is much more theatrical. I can't rave enough about how awesome watching this series is on Blu-ray compared to even high-definition television. If you're going to go get this, get the season, check it out on Blu-ray. Then it's going to make you go buy the other ones if you haven't bought them already. It is that good of a home theater experience. I cannot wait, though apparently I have to.
Well, I don't know. I actually just ordered mine off Amazon Saturday because I saw what price they had, and I'm a Prime member, so shipping's going to be free. And I actually got my notice that it shipped already and that I should get it tomorrow. Nate, you talk about going out and buying the other ones if you haven't. I have, and I'm still thinking about going out and buying the other ones because I noticed over the weekend at Walmart, and I know they'd been on Amazon. I could have ordered them at any time, but I just noticed my local Walmart has seasons 1 and 2 with the new repackaging, you know, to where there's not a booklet. And I cannot tell you how much it bothers me that my seasons 1 and 2 and now my 3 and 4 won't match on my shelf. I am actually considering rebuying 1 and 2 and maybe dumping my current ones. I mean, the book's nice and all, but to me, I can't stand it when things don't match. If I'm going to have, you know, let's say 6 or 7 seasons, I want them to be in the same packaging. However, my understanding is, I guess somewhere there's a region free where season 1, 2, and 3 were all put together in a box set anyway, so maybe I should just hold off anyhow. But yes, I'll certainly be thinking about that. So, Baron, how about you?
You know, much has been talked about Baron's long game, okay, or lack thereof of my long game. I guess a pre-order and waiting to pick the pre-order up doesn't count as long game. So I'm playing the long game, all right, on this. And it's the real long game, okay, where I'm going to wait until the end of the season, end of the series, you know, after Ahsoka's death, after all that. And I'm going to wait until they sell them all together. That way I don't have to worry about things that match. I can just go pick up the big Book of Clone Wars or whatever, however they're going to do it, 23 discs or whatever. So I'm waiting. But, you know, I can borrow any one of yours anytime you want to mail it over. I mean,
so you're waiting for the season finale, Ahsoka is Dead limited edition from Best Buy or something, where it comes like a little action figure of her corpse or something.
Yes, I want the total complete set in the Ahsoka carrying case dome that they will sell with her tears.
Oh man, see my first format collector is just cringing at both that and Jerry going back and rebuying them. To me, you know, if it's first out in Blu-ray in those sets with the little booklets, I don't care if it matches. I want that first release of it. I don't know. That's my OCD collecting.
Yeah, but I'll be able to pick. I mean, you're selling stuff all the time, Nate. I mean, if I want the first release, all I really have to do is wait. And you're selling it for the next Resident Evil video game. So, you know. Not I'm glad the, I know you.
The, yeah.
Well, one last topic. This kind of actually just hit out on the Cartoon Network's website just as we were recording that apparently what Arnie spoke to us about during our Celebration 6 show, he was, you know, pretty much we were the first and really only podcast / website to even speak of this. But Arnie had an opportunity to go to a screening of these like youngling type themed shows with Ahsoka and some appearance with Yoda and Hondo, etc., etc. And he talked about one episode where it seemed like they learned how to build a lightsaber, and according to Cartoon Network, that's apparently going to be an episode that we get later this season.
Not only later this season, it's the episode after this arc ends, apparently, based on Cartoon Network's schedule. But it's apparently going to be just a one-episode thing, because it looks like it goes straight from that into what seems to be the return of Rush Clovis. And certainly there was, what, 80 minutes or whatever it was that actually aired at Celebration 6?
Yeah, Arnie saw at least 3, if not 4, episodes worth of footage.
It was an 88-minute screening, so that would be 4 episodes.
Yeah, so we've got The Gathering, which is, you know, the Highlander reference, I guess. That's the one that should be coming up right after next week's episode, Tipping Points.
Well, that does stand to reason that if we have 22 episodes and a theme of 4 episode arcs, that you're going to have at least 2, if not 6, you know, standalone episodes that obviously doesn't divide, you know, by 4. So maybe this is the one we get this year as sort of a, hey, let's throw that out there and see if we can get the other 3 in there and fill some gaps. I mean, I guess that's how a, you know, someone like Filoni has to think. Let me make some standalone episodes that I can throw in any time in case I need an episode to split an arc, or I need to just throw something out there because I need to fill out my 22 episode season. I don't know, but it'll be interesting to see what they do with it.
Airing in chronological order, My Bootay, because apparently isn't this supposed to also be the Young Jedi stuff that tells the background of the clash with Grievous and Hondo that supposedly took place prior to Revival?
Yeah, but remember, Revival was supposed to air later in the season anyway.
Right, so it's definitely not airing in chronological order at this point, although they've left that question up in the air about Adi Gallia, so it seems like there is some question as to whether they're going to keep Revival where it is or push it to later in the season chronologically. That seems like that's been thrown into somewhat of continuity chaos, and there has not been an answer based on what they said on StarWars.com. So who knows? Maybe we're getting some shuffling around this season all over again after a season that was pretty much straightforward.
All right, gentlemen, thanks for joining me this week, but we will certainly be back to wrap up this arc with Episode 5, Tipping Point. We'll see you then.
Looking forward to it.
Sounds good.
I can't wait for the massacre.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Berent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all that the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademarked, Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a Venganza Media production. Copyright 2012. All rights reserved.